The Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle Show contains explicit language and is intended for mature audiences only. But just because you're mature doesn't mean you can't be a little naughty.
What's going on, everyone? It is April 11th, 2023. It kind of feels weird doing this after a 5 or 6 day hiatus, but I am back, and this is actually a triple show tonight. And tonight might be dedicated for those guys out there that are spectacular in bed, but have very, very small or average peepees. And basically, it just goes to show you it's not the size of the organ. It's what you do with it and how you use it. So that's a little hint at tonight's show. It's not the size of the show or the length of the show. It's how we actually perform. And why, when I say we, it's because for the first part of tonight's show, I am not alone. Returning once again with me is...
Kevin Castle. I thought you were going to say, with that said about dicks, here's Kevin Castle.
No.
I'm just kidding. But that was a good, opening.
Yeah. Asshole DT is, you know, like my assholeness is redirected now to the ignorant folk online. The people are intentionally ignoring like facts and, you know, just factoids, you know, just for hits, views, likes, you know, the deal.
And that's a lot of them,
you know, and I guess we should just throw this out there right away. You know, Kev is going to be up with me for about a half an hour. We're going to talk about a few topics that we discussed in advance. And some of it is probably clearing up a little bit of clickbait, but also to educate everybody a little bit as well, as far as some of the things that are being thrown around out there. And one thing right off the bat is, you know, like, who is actually like the boss right now with regards to WWE and the hiring freeze and who answers to who? You know, and I want everybody to take note that when you see online that Vince is back 100% doing this and, you know, full blown, you know, get used to it. WWE and Vince McMahon is no longer the boss. Endeavor is the boss. The board of directors is going to consist of 11 members. 6 of them will be from Endeavor. 5 of them will be from WWE. If you follow politics at all, think of the Senate or think of the House. When the Senate is 51% Democrat and Republicans are 49% Republican, then chances are the Democrats are going to win every single time. So when people get upset saying that Vince is in charge, Vince is back in power, this is Endeavor choosing Vince to do what he is doing. This is not Vince taking it upon himself. And, you know, something else that Kevin and I were talking about before we started this conversation tonight. You know, as far as a hiring freeze goes, all right, pretend you have something on Craigslist. Pretend you have something on eBay. Pretend you are selling something pretty substantial, a car, a house, you know, something of that magnitude, and you get a potential buyer for it. When you agree on a sale, or in this case, a merger, and there's a big difference there, just look up the tax differences. The last thing that WWE is going to do is start changing the rims on the car, revamping the house, buying extra furniture, buying extra appliances. So when you hear about hiring freeze, layoffs, this isn't that, this is not Vince being a prick, being the boss. This is what is called transfer of ownership, merger. There is a big deal going on worth $11 billion, not a $5 Patreon subscription or a YouTube super chat. We're talking billions of dollars here. WWE is not going to revamp their whole house or start going on a spending spree when they haven't even completed the deal with Endeavor. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. Again, I think that people are just that, you know, there is no guy to really point to. Like, you can point to the Emmanuel guy, but I don't think he's going to be. I mean, there's other people, underlings under him. I don't think he's going to be a guy doing bookings with Vince. You know, I think Emmanuel, that's above that's a little below his pay grade.
Yes.
I don't know who the guy is or the liaison or who the, let's say for Endeavor, who his Nick Khan will be.
Yeah.
Like, do you know the name of the secondary guy, like who's second in charge to Emmanuel, like the way Nick Khan is to Vince? I don't have a name for anybody. Do you?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, a liaison who will be working with Nick and, you know, Triple H and stuff like that in a supervisory capacity or an equal capacity in Nick Khan. Yeah, because, you know, I know all the players on Vince's side, but I don't know the players on Emmanuel's side.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is that Endeavor, basically it's WWE, UFC, everything is, you know, Endeavor. They're all merging together and they're forming a new company. And
right.
the letters for the stock market is going to be called TKO. That's actually what the letters are going to be in the stock market.
Oh, wow.
As far as right now, I think Vince McMahon is, you know, was named as far as, you know, his position. And I know Cornette and others have talked about, like, you know, I haven't really heard of that, you know, position before and this and that. But Nick Khan technically is the president.
Right.
You know, so Nick Khan has a lot of power. But again, what I think people need to understand, that 51 to 49% ratio is a big deal. And here's something else people need to think about. You know, when WWE was still World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated, Vince McMahon had two types of shares of stock. One was class, you know, common shares that you could buy, I could buy, we can all buy. But he also had another common set of stock that gave him like 83%, you know, voting power in WWE. I don't know if it was Class B shares or whatever it is. So, you know, once this merges into this new company, that secondary set of shares are no longer, you know, they have no longer any worth because WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated, will be done. So a lot of people don't understand, and the majority of Vince McMahon's current power is that second class of stock, which gives him 83% voting power. When that stock all converts over to TKO, Vince McMahon is only going to have, I don't know the exact number, but I would say approximately 15% of the shares. You know, Nobody talks about that because it's so easy and convenient to say, oh, Vince is back in power. Vince is doing this. Vince is doing that. Nobody calls out Endeavor. Nobody says any because, again, like we talked about it last week, you think of Dana White, you think of Ari Emanuel, you think of some of these other people, you think of some of the people in UFC. You get any of these, you know, low-rent goofs, you know, especially in the media world, in the wrestling news world, and they start calling out these bigwigs, they'll turn around and say, go fuck your mother. Get the fuck out of my face, you little fucking dweeb. It's not like Vince and Triple H, they're going to just ignore the social media stuff. These guys will turn around and put them in their place. That's why no one is calling out Endeavor at all. Zero. Nobody. Yeah. And it blows me away.
Yeah, again, I think that, you know, to me, there's so much still to learn. I think, you know, things are just happened. I mean, literally just happened.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into the fact of the, you know, the narrative, you know, which we're going to talk about in detail, that people are what's the base way? I mean, I don't even know if it's gaslighting. I mean, people are basically looking for stuff to concern fans about who are just trying to kind of watch and take it all in. Yeah. And I don't know why, but even some podcasts are normally very rational and kind of will analyze and think things out. are kind of just flamethrowing, like, just like, did you see that? That's definitely Vince. Did you see that? That's the influence. This is what you should prepare for. This is what this guy, like, everything is a problem. Look for these little Easter egg, which are little grenades that are going to ruin the product. You know, all these things, they're reading into things. I don't even know if they're even there. And it's kind of hard to watch that. And if you're going on social media and going by podcast live tweeting, it's a miserable experience. It really is. I mean, it's really miserable. I mean, I personally just go, you see me, I joke around, ha ha, I'm going for the joke. I'm not trying to make anybody turn Raw off or turn off SmackDown or go do something else, watch anything but this shit. I mean, I don't know. And it's ironic because we're not making a living per se, but we're making some coin from doing this. Other podcasters are making more than others, but WWE is kind of a big part of what you do. Wouldn't you kind of like to put a little bit of a positive spin on stuff instead of like taking it and completely Debbie downing the whole product? I don't understand what the end game or the point is, and I don't understand how you get more out of that and give more to your listeners and viewers by making them feel like they're wasting their time watching a product that you kind of benefit from.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't get that. Is that called hate watching, DT?
I think it is. I think it's just, you know, it's easier to call out problems than make solutions. You know, and that's the thing I think with a lot of these people out there, like they have no solutions for it. You know, they'll say, oh, put the belt on this person or put the belt on this person. Like I saw somebody today saying, oh, Trish Stratus exposed the women's division. I'm like, what did she no disrespect to Trish, but a subpar chick kick. You know, like Becky Lynch is the number one baby face in the women's division next to Bianca Belair. And you know, Rhea Ripley's going to get up there as well, even though she's a heel. But it's like you're comparing Trish Stratus, who has had basically one match, and we called out that she's had less than 10 matches in 10 years, and she's going to be gone in about 2 or 3 months from now, and she's exposing the women's division. What the fuck does that even mean?
I don't know what that means. And yeah, that match was pretty shitty last night. I just felt the girls were all out of sync. Raquel looked lost when she went out and then literally dropped her partner on top. I mean, I don't know what that was. I mean, that was, I think Becky out of the four was the best out of the four. Yeah. But Liv and people saying, oh, Kevin, fairness, Liv and Raquel haven't been a team that long. They switched partners for both girls several times. Yeah, but it's professional pro, the emphasis on pro. They look like deers in the headlights, and you can't put it on Trish. You're right, DT. She's a part-time. And yeah. Trish doesn't, because people are like, wouldn't Trish as the veteran call the pace of the match? Not necessarily. No, I don't think so, DT.
Unless she physically felt that she could command the whole match. But you know what? It's also respect for the women of today. Then Trish is not going to start telling Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez, or anybody else, like, okay, I'm going to call this and I'm going to call that. She will call spots that she feels comfortable in doing, that she knows that she could still do. Obviously, Liv and anyone else is not going to tell Trish, okay, do this, or I'm going to do this. And, you know, what do you think? They're going to start having a conversation in the middle of the ring over coffee, like, hey, I don't know if I could actually do this. So, you know, Trish, there's got to be a compromise there. But, you know, the thing is that Trish, I don't think people realize she's only going to have like 1 to 3 matches, and that's it.
No, yeah.
This isn't like she just like got a fire lit under her ass, and after all this time, she's, you know, returning like Edge did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
This is leading. A lot of people think SummerSlam. I'm kind of surprised why so many people are ignoring Saudi Arabia. This feels almost prime for Saudi Arabia. Shit. I was even thinking, I mean, I know everybody expects Becky versus Trish, and I do as well. But I was also thinking, I can imagine Saudi Arabia saying, oh, you know, what about having Lita versus Trish? We bring back a little bit of nostalgia. They'll throw $1 million, $2 million out just for something like that. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, with what I'm alerted to most about what you just said was the more Asian voice.
I know, I know. See, I forget that Kevin and I were not talking for a couple of years. I have definitely started occupying a couple of bad habits. You know, my Asian sounds Spanish. My Arabic sounds Asian for some reason. Hey, I sound the same way when I talk, when I do Andrade or I do Miro, the Nidima. Like, it's just like, I try to be, what is that, uniracial.
Unilateral,
yeah, uniracial. That's unisexual, I'm uniracial. So everything sounds like this. Ooh, you got Lita and Trish.
You're right. That could be a match, Trish versus Lita there. But what about Puerto Rico? You don't think they'll have the girls wrestle
there? It's possible. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it could be a tag match. I mean, you know, something is brewing with Bayley and Damage Control.
Yeah,
there's, you know, something up there too, definitely brewing there. They're teasing it a little bit as well. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, Charlotte is taking a little bit of time off again. And, you know, we talked about it last week about Charlotte's age. I think some people take, you know, don't take a step back and think like, wow, she's a little bit older than I think people realize. Look at Bayley. I mean, are you used to yet looking at Bayley like the aunt of the women's division? Like, no, I still think of the hugger.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about also Bayley possibly teaming with Trish and turning on. I, for some reason, see Io Sky and, see, I was thinking Bayley was going to turn babyface. I think Io Sky is going to turn babyface.
Yeah, I think that could happen.
I think her and Dakota might turn babyface, and Bayley gets with Trish Stratus and goes like, Saudi could be her and Trish. You got four star power right there. You know, four star power women right there. Bayley, Trish Stratus versus Lita and Becky. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can do a lot with those four because you got the two stars of today and the two stars of yesteryear. Put them on both sides. But, yeah, there's definitely something. I think Becky, Bayley is turning. I think she's thinking Io Sky's getting too much publicity now, and she's going to turn on her. You saw she got a good, the only one who got a little bit of a pop yesterday was Io Sky, and Bayley was kind of looking at her at the side of her mouth. So there's something going on there, too.
Yeah.
You're right.
I mean, the match was great yesterday, but, you know, Meechan and, you know, even, oh, wow, they changed her name, and it's like, you know, it's Doudrop with a different name.
Piper Niven, yeah. I mean, I said that for a minute, I think people thought Meechan was Sasha Banks with the hair now.
Yeah.
So, like, I think, you know, because people are like, oh, you know, the name is not doing them any good. I don't know. There's just no connection. Tegan Knox, all these people they brought back, Candice, you know, they're struggling to get these girls over from NXT. That's why I'm kind of glad that they're not bringing anybody up from Tiffany or anybody just yet, because they're still... Tegan Knox and Candice are still struggling for a reaction.
Yes.
So, you know, really, are we going to go crazy when Gigi Dolan comes up here? I mean, what's going to be the difference, DT?
I agree. Yeah. That's why every time I saw these thousands and thousands of entries, a petition, bring Indy Hartwell to the main roster, I'm like, for what? Double dating with Dexter Lumis, LeRae, and Johnny Gargano, and then what? Then what, 6 months from now? Then 6 months from now, if they're still doing it, people are going to be like, you know, they can't do something else. Like, she's going to get squashed like a grape. There's too many women ahead of her. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, leave most of them in NXT. No rush there. I was very happy. I didn't watch most of NXT tonight, but I was very happy about the Grizzled Young Veterans still being in that company, the Dyad. And I got to tell you, he did something that's really funny. You know, last week, Jason Powell, I used to call him Goofy Powell, but, you know, I got the news from his page, and Meltzer's the one that reported it, so... I go back to read the article about last week when they said that they requested their release and they were granted it. And I see that, you know, ProWrestling.net deleted the article and Dave Meltzer deleted all his tweets about the GVW. And I'm saying to myself, why don't you just, like, update everybody and say, oh, listen, you know, apparently that they're staying after all. It's like, just delete it. And it's like we never said it after all. But I tell you the funny thing, and I got to show everybody, you know, like even like Gerwick, and I've always been a fan of Gerwick, but I just posted a link in Patreon, and I invite anyone to go see for yourself. If you click on that one page for Gerwick's website, I'm not kidding you. There is, I counted 21 ads on that one page, 21. I mean, this is not $19.99 anymore. There's 21 ads on that page just to read a small paragraph from the, you know, from the show. But, you know, yesterday's Raw, obviously there was a lot of travel issues. A lot of people that were in Orlando got stuck in Orlando. And as a result, I mean, Riddle, think about this. Riddle and Sami Zayn got in there literally about 20 minutes before Raw went off the air. They came in, did that quick run-in, and they were right back on a plane to go for SmackDown.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yep. I mean, what was all those travel delays? Why was that?
You know what? Orlando, listen, I was in Orlando in September, and I could tell you firsthand that Orlando, sometimes it could be a major disaster there. And we were talking to a lot of people that came in from Texas, came in from other areas. And more often than not, people are like, yeah, our flights were delayed, and this and that. You know, in September, I think COVID was a little bit worse than what it is now. I can't explain it. There was no bad weather. There was no, like, big tragedies. There was no hiring freezes. There was no layoffs or, you know, it's just they were all booked, I think, for the same flight, and they all got tremendously delayed. And they still, some of them still flew to the show. I mean, say what you want. I mean, you know, the yesterday's show was not the greatest. It was, I would probably put it, you know, below average. But the fact that some of those people still flew from Orlando, you know, halfway across the country, and then showing up literally 15 minutes, 20 minutes before the show goes off the air.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Do a quick run-in just for the fans and then hop back on a plane to go, you know, travel towards SmackDown. I got to give a little bit of credit for that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, that was impressive and stuff. I didn't know if that was a work or they really
it was
just
legit.
Literally just got there. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, talk about cutting it close for live television. But, yeah, no, that was cool. And Raw was a better show. I know we're not going to do a full review, but Raw was a better show last night than it was the week before. But as getting back to what were you saying, though, still a lot of complaints and still, you know, I wouldn't expect watch next week. It's only going to get worse. Even if it gets a little better, it'll get worse. And I'm like, I don't know. This deal with Endeavor, I mean, everything doesn't really take full the form to like the end of the year from what they're saying, right? With the more, what changes. I don't think there's immediate cuts. I think cuts are coming, but I think towards the latter or the middle of the latter part of the year. I don't think it's next week or anything like that.
I was watching people online saying last week when Triple H came out and said, you know, like, you know, we will keep going, that he was like depressed and sad and, you know, he might quit. And I'm like, the motherfucker just got a $5 million bonus. Like, he's getting more power than before, but
yeah, you know, he's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. And also, you know, do you want to debunk or at least give our opinions on the supposed hiring freeze? And,
yes.
And you know, we should, might as well get into that as we're talking about, you know, potential cuts that always happen when one company dissolves another or a company merges with another.
Yeah, there's going to, listen, I want everybody to be prepared. You know, understand something. Everybody that gets a paycheck right now with World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated on it, and when they get it paid a paycheck from UFC or Endeavor, whatever it is, a lot of those people's paychecks are going to change to the new corporation, whatever it's called. I can't remember the name of it, but I know in the stock market they're TKO. The point is that right now you have people working in bookkeeping for WWE. You have people working in bookkeeping for UFC. You got people working in booking for Endeavor. And they're not going to turn around and say, oh, we're going to keep all three aboard because that's the right thing to do and this and that. No, there's going to be probably 100, maybe more cuts at minimum. I mean, I wouldn't even be surprised if WWE's offices in Connecticut get either, you know, either dwindled down to next to nothing or they relocate in a different area. You know, for some reason, I don't know if it's laziness or if people just realize like, oh shit, if I do the research, then I'm forced to know the truth. And if I don't do the research, then I can't come across that I know the truth because if people start understanding about Endeavor and about the deal, you know, a lot of people still don't even realize this is a merger. This is technically not a sale, so to speak. And look up the taxes because there's a lot of stockholders that are not going to be subject to tax when this transfers over. And that's because it is classified as a merger and not necessarily a full-blown sale. It's just, I think there are people out there that purposely are not doing the research to learn and understand what is actually going to happen, because once they do, you know, it's almost like you get tripped up with facts. Like, if you just don't read it, like, I don't understand French. So I'm not going to start, you know, talking here, and then halfway through my sentence, I'm like, yeah, oui, Kev. You know, like, I'm going to start revealing that, hey, I actually do know it. So I think a lot of people are purposely just ignoring it. You know, Endeavor is the boss.
Nah.
Endeavor's the boss. But, yeah, as far as the freezes go, you know, you would almost put it this way. It's almost as dumb common sense as two news articles I read tonight. WWE was concerned about a Raw wrestler wrestling yesterday from coming from injury. And I'm like, gee, I wonder who that could be. You know, it's like Balor just had like a whole bunch of staples in his head. And then best tonight, Cora Jade explains why she attacked Indy Hartwell last week. I'm like, maybe because she wants the title. You know, it's it's not even news. It's just common sense, you know, but Endeavor is the boss. And the hiring freeze, it's not a it's a soft freeze. And basically anything that transpires now. See, look, I'll give you a great example. Great example. Logan Paul. Everybody reported over the last week that WWE has this big, huge hiring freeze. Well, they re-signed Logan Paul.
Yeah.
You know, like, how did that happen? Well, see, whether it's not that... Oh, well, you know, existing wrestlers, that's different. No, that's still the same fucking expense. Yet at the end of the year, when you do your tax, you're like, well, this is not a new hire. This is, you know, just an extension of a contract. No, it's a soft hiring freeze because they inked a deal with Endeavor. And now anything that is they're thinking about doing, they're going to run it across Endeavor. Hey, you know, Logan Paul, you know, we have the opportunity to extend his contract for 3 more years. What do you think? And Endeavor is going to give the go on this. This is not Vince is going to re-sign this person or, you know, like I read like, oh, Jay White, you know, Brian Cage ended up re-signing with AEW because there's a hiring freeze in WWE. No, that's not the reason why. It's because Brian Cage, and unfortunately, we've said it before with fans of his, but he has a lot of baggage. He doesn't work well with others. That is the word behind the scenes. And, you know, maybe he didn't see the opportunity on the wall. Maybe there was no interest. You know, just because Brian Cage is decent doesn't mean that WWE is knocking down his door trying to sign him. Same thing with Jay White.
Yeah, no, they have guys already that, you know, they have Madcap Moss, they have Cross, they have a bunch of people, you know, just as talented and upside as Brian Cage, and around the same age, by the way. Brian Cage is on the cusp of 40. You know, Brian Cage has been around a long time, if people don't know, well over 16, 17 years.
Yeah.
He's no newbie in the business. And same thing with Jay White. They have Drew McIntyre. They have guys like this already. So lanky build, tall, can work. You know, I mean, we have versions of these guys already that we're not even pushing to the top yet. So why get someone else and then get in the back of the line? I don't think anybody's cutting the line. So, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any solid evidence of any talks with Brian Cage or with Jay White or that any money was on the table, that there was actually a contract offer to either party or that they met with Triple H or with McMahon.
Right.
I didn't hear any of that.
Right. And this is what I pointed out last Wednesday when it comes to Jay White. When you see news reporters saying, like, those within WWE were really hoping that a deal could be worked out with Jay White, they're not talking about WWE management. They're talking about the wrestlers. There are wrestlers within WWE that would love to work with Jay White. Yeah. There are wrestlers in WWE that are friends with Jay White. Those are the ones that were hoping that WWE management would work out a deal with him. The problem is that... these news journalists are not talking to Triple H. They're not talking to Nick Khan. They're not talking to Kevin Dunn. They're not talking to Bruce Pritchard. They're not talking to Vince McMahon. They're not talking to Endeavor. They're not talking to, you know, anybody in management. And please, please, when people say to me, no, they were talking to management, name me an example of somebody in WWE management that they could have possibly, I'll let people slide with the possibly term. Name me one person in WWE management right now that these journalists could be talking to. One. Name me one person.
Couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine. I mean, people are putting in headlines or putting in their podcasts that like Jay White turns down WWE to go to AEW. Turn down what? You have no evidence that he turned down anything. Right. I mean, it's complete. We're getting like politics now. It's wrestling is just like MSNBC, Fox, all this stuff. Just made up shit.
Yeah.
There's nothing. Turn down what? That's like, you know, DT, you would have to invite me tonight for me to turn down your invite to come on the show. I couldn't just come on the show and not talk to you because there's a protocol that goes right on. It's called being invited.
Yes.
Did people who are not invited show up to your wedding, DT?
Thank God. Thank God.
How many people from the community came and crashed the wedding? I mean, what does that mean? Turn down a non-invite? How do you turn down a non-invite?
You know who's a great one? Eva Marie. Eva Marie does an interview today and she says, yeah, I'm in constant contact with WWE. I'm like, who are you in constant contact with?
Like the wrestlers, like
the door
said,
is always open. I'm like, the door is always open. Like, who are you actually talking to? The only person I could picture her talking to is, the one with the Just for Men hair color and, that has kind of like a launching pad below his nose.
She's probably got a friend that perhaps Jay White hit up his friend AJ Styles and said, hey, AJ, you think they'd have interest in me coming in? I don't know. I'll mention you to Paul maybe as interest. That's where I think that's as far as that goes. And Brian Cage, good friend of the Cross, by the way, good friend with a lot of people. And maybe you said, hey, you think they'd have interest in bringing me in? Let me see. But that's not an invite or a meeting with management.
Right, exactly.
That's not a meeting with management. You know, feeling out something. That's like asking, hey, you think this girl likes me? You know, I mean, it's like, Kev turns down marriage proposal from like, what? Where are you getting that from? I don't get, but I love that. Jay White decides between WWE goes with AEW. Show me Meltzer where that he turned down. Show us the contract. Yeah, show us
a fact. Show us something. Show us an email. Black out the names. Like, hey, we would love for you to be a part of World Wrestling Entertainment.
Very, very hurt that you chose AEW.
Well,
over
we
us.
Wish you well. Signed, we are disappointed Paul-esque. That you turned down our offer, but we wish you well on your endeavors.
I'd love to see. I swear to God, I see it. I'll come on and placate and apologize to everybody that I was wrong. Yeah. But we're not gonna see it.
Yeah. Listen, I know, you know, time flies when we're having fun, and I know you're right on a half hour. Let's talk about
Vicky.
We got to talk about one topic, and I know a lot of people have talked about it, and I've kind of like battled with myself back and forth. Originally, I wasn't even going to bring it up because it's too personal. It's family. You'll let them deal with it themselves, but something kept sticking to my craw, if that's even the right phrase to say. Something just kept bothering me, and I told you what it was right before we went live. And, you know, for those that don't know what's going on, you know, Vicky Guerrero, she's done with AEW. Her contract is officially done in July, but they've already removed her profile. She's removed all her social media accounts. Last week, there was a war on social media between Vicky and her daughter Sherilyn, and Chavo got involved with it, and
Charles
Guerrero got involved. Basically, and I'll tell you why we're bringing it up. You know, for those that don't know the deal, Vicky's daughter Sherilyn specifically made accusations that Vicky Guerrero's husband, her stepfather, sexually assaulted her. That's what she said. And she posted a TikTok video, and she said...
On a cruise, by the way, which is supposedly the Chris Jericho cruise before or right when COVID happened.
Yes, in 2020. And right. She said it was a stepfather, and then this had Vicky returning with a comment saying there's two sides to every story, and Sherilyn has a lot of emotional problems, and Chavo basically, went to bat, I think, for Vicky, right?
No, he more went to bat for his niece. But there's always stuff said by the other side that Chavo barely sees them, so like he doesn't know.
Okay.
But there was a lot of ugliness that went on, and then the sister Shaw said that an assault did happen, and she specified it was not a rape. It was so it could have been a chest grab, an ass slap. We don't know what it was. And that's totally inappropriate. And I think there was alcohol involved, too, on this cruise with all parties involved.
This is why we decided
allegedly,
to talk about it.
Allegedly.
Yeah. This is why we decided to talk about it. because this is a conversation Kevin and I had many, many, many years ago. And it's kind of mind-boggling that it just gets worse and worse and worse. And, you know, we've seen it with podcasters. We've seen it with journalists. We've seen it with everyday, you know, people we come across online. And what blows me away about all of this, and Sherilyn, you know, she's been in therapy because of this. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say it like this, but Vicky basically is saying that Sherilyn's got a couple of, you know, she's a couple of eggs short of a dozen. You know, there's a lot of back and forth, and it's very, very, very bitter. What my problem is, and this is why we're talking about it, is why once again is someone running to Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and not the police? Why the fuck is Sherilyn doing a TikTok video instead of calling the police and saying that my stepfather assaulted me? You're going on social media and you're telling tens of millions of people that you've been sexually assaulted by the husband of Vicky Guerrero, and you don't go to the cops. I don't fucking understand it. And I never forget the other guy. I can't remember his name. Was it AEW Botches? I don't remember the name of the Twitter account. We weren't talking at the time, Kev, but a couple of years ago, and I don't think I got the Twitter account wrong, but I think it was AEW Botches. And there was one guy that was posting a lot of anti-AEW stuff. And he went public and said that somebody threatened his family, his kid. They were going to dox his kid's information. And
oh,
posters.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
and
I
what
that.
I did was, people are like, oh, my God, that's criminal. That's this is that. And I'm like, wow, that's like some FBI shit. Like, you can't just like throw shit like that. So, but at the same time, though, I've seen too many people online that post these outrageous claims of threats and never fucking go to the cops. And to me, that is a warning sign. Like, you know, there might be more to this story. The fact that you're so scared about your kid, your three-year-old kid, you're so scared about your wife, you're so scared about going home at night, and you tweet about it instead of calling the fucking cops, that's kind of puts a red flag for me. So what I did was I went on the FBI's cyber crimes website and everything, and I filed it as a complaint. I referred the tweets, the screenshots, everything like that, and I filed it for him as a concerned person. I DM'd the guy, and I said, listen, I said, I know you didn't ask me to do this, but, you know, maybe you didn't know you could do this, but I went and I filed an FBI report and I filed this, I filed that. They're going to probably get in touch with you. You know, that you and I have had death threats over the years and people fucking with us online. And, you know, we've called law enforcement and, you know, sometimes it's gone away. I sent him all this stuff. To this day, he's never said, hey, man, thank you for doing it. You didn't have to do that, but I appreciate you looking out. Never once. And that's why I posted it on his Twitter account publicly that I did that. Because I'm like, here's a guy that's claiming that somebody's threatened to dox like his three-year-old kid's information, his home address, his wife, his this, his that. And you're going on Twitter for support, for sympathy, but you're not calling the cops. Doesn't make sense. And now I see something like this where she's accusing the R word, you know, sexual assault. You know, it's sexual assault. And no law enforcement is contacted.
And sexual assault, by the way, could be anything from an ass slap, ass grab, yeah, a chest grab, a unwanted touching, a running your hand up someone's back. It could be an assortment of things. And one thing I want to say, DT, and tell me chat room if you agree with me. Remember when being in a courtroom would be the scariest thing for you. Yep. Now the court of public opinion to me is far more intimidating to be actually in a courtroom of legal proceedings. The court of public opinion, everybody is much more afraid of. You notice that, DT? Yep. My God, I have bosses who run clubs who are terrified that anybody tags them on a complaint about the club. They come, handle that, get them to remove that. I'm like, dude, they just didn't have a good time. It's not, you know, my God, what the fuck? Like, you know, I've seen you less rattled over the police raiding the club. Like, since when has the court of public opinion become more of a precedent, like set, like this is the boundaries, and going to the cops is like, no, let me take it to the public. the public, this is, you know,
I'll get a
you,
like.
Know, you want to, you know what,
I'll get a hug is? Emoji.
Yeah, just go and look at Frankenstein and the townspeople with the torches and the pitchforks. That's what you think is justice, or what, and especially if you got to get facts. And also, is anybody taking consideration? I'm about to press send, and this tweet can ruin this person's life.
Yes.
Not worse than if the cops arrested him. Yeah. Because, DT, me and you know people who have been arrested, accused of things. I've worked with people who have been arrested for a multitude of things, assault, whatever, forged a check. I know people have done stuff and have been able to come back from it. Oh, it was a bad time for me, whatever. But it seems to me that if you get put on blast as a molester, a child toucher, a fucking drunk driver who killed somebody, someone who did something like that everyone sees as heinous and no coming back from, even if there are some things you can come back from, there's a certain things yes, other things no. But when you get you, they press that send or they make that fucking TikTok, then I don't even know if they're even taking consideration. I'm about to fuck up worlds with people. I'm about to cause a fucking tidal wave of shit. You were better off having the motherfucker arrested and not telling anybody.
Exactly. And that's why even when you and I were discussing like some message boards and Facebook pages and Reddits where people are really, really coming down on us, maybe me more than you, and I'm like, people don't understand. People have gotten way too comfortable to just throw people in the mud and say some awful things about them. And, you know, it gets to the point where, you know, and to see people just sit back and let it happen, that's where it gets even worse. You know, I don't think Vicky or Chavo or Shawl or anyone else made this situation any better. But at the same time, though, it's like, Jesus, like none of this should have been put online in the first place. You know, this should have been held, taken care of in for law enforcement or court or something else. You know, they said they went to therapy or whatever. Doesn't matter. Like, why was this put on social media? The only answer to me is somebody was trying to ruin someone's life.
Right. Someone's trying to ruin someone's life. And also for the attention, and because back to the wall, people think, and I've seen people do this, I know dysfunctional bands, people see stuff going on now with Motley Crue, where the founding member Mick Mars is suing his band, very public thing going on right now. Happened in Judas Priest, KK Downing, original founding member, completely ostracized by his band, it feels like thrown by the wayside. And then they go to Twitter and then do interviews and stuff like that. I mean, it's the thing to do now, that it's like back in the day, you would have to read, oh, I wonder what's going on with these court proceedings. Well, you know, it's private. You'll hear about it when, you know, the results come out. But now it's just like, nope, I'm going to go on here. I'm going to tell my story. Tell my truth is the thing that everybody likes to say. It's not just a woman thing. Guys think that too. Let me tell my truth. What you are is telling your side, your truth in your head. And listen, it's when you do go to court, you know, there'll be a jury of your peers or a judge to decide what's really going to go down. But it used to begin and end with that, DT.
Exactly.
Now it's a forever thing. And you know how this shit is. It stays online forever. And Vicky's going to have to go to fucking conventions and be accosted by stupid ass fans. Getting in, and listen, I don't blame Vicky for the final thing that she said. Listen, she went after her daughter hard. I get it. People go like, how can a mother do that to a child? Come on, has anybody, and I talked about this with Mish too on the show last week that we did Wrestling Soup, and we were in agreement with a lot of things too. We'd be in agreement with what we're discussing now, I think, pretty much. That some parents are pushed to the fucking hilt with kids, troubled kids, whether it's emotional, addiction problems, they're over promiscuous, they're this and that, bringing shame on the family, every time it's stress and strife, every time they pick up the phone from their troubled adult kid. We don't know anybody like that. We all either have a cousin or a family, God forbid, a brother or a sister or a sibling, or maybe we were like that ourselves.
Yeah.
And people act like, oh, there's not the perfect nuclear family over there. You know, it's not, you know, everything's not hunky-dory. My life is great. What's, they're having difficulties, Vicky curses her daughter out. Oh my God, if I had a nickel for every time old school that there was shouting matches between aunts and my cousins and people. Now, nothing like this. I would never think that they would dream, even with the technology today, that any of my family members would go on. You've never seen me or my brothers ever blast each other in public. Right. We have like an unwritten thing amongst each other that, hey, we'll pick up the phone and scream the shit out of each other, but we're never going to do that to each other. There's like an unwritten rule between me and my four brothers. We have had differences, and now I'd be horrified if I seen my brothers go on there and go, well, since I can't get Kevin on the phone, let me just tell you my story with Kevin. Like what the and I'm think half the fans would be like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what are you, but you're like, people say, I'm all animated about this because this drives me nuts, because I heard even people saying Vicky is a fucking disgrace. And maybe people even saying that Eddie's family should have raised her after Eddie died. Oh, I mean, just boy. How do you know what this girl put her through? Kev, the girl was 10 when she died and lost her father. Yes. And so was Shaw, was 13. Vicky was a young mother in her 30s. Everybody suffered when Eddie died. And you also don't know these people like that. You were making an assessment and a judgment call saying someone's kids should have been taken away from them because what you how long ago did Eddie die, by the way, DT? 16 years ago?
Yeah.
How long ago was it?
It was 2009. No, 2009.
How long ago was the guys in the chat that Eddie died? How many years is it now? I mean, but for people to say and to Vicky, you're a horrible mother, you're a terrible. Listen, I'm not the biggest Vicky Guerrero fan of her character.
2005.
Wow. Listen, years. Some DT, you know this too. Growing up, we've had friends who lost their parents. Maybe we were going to school, and one brother went this way, and one brother went that way. Yes. One brother was the good brother. The other brother was a criminal and formed a gang. These things fucking happen. I don't understand these self-righteous fuckfaces on fucking social media who are making judgment calls on families. They have no idea. They don't even know, because they're like, Kev, even if he slapped her ass, that's a fucking disgrace. But it's, you have to go by what led to all this stuff. Was there alcohol involved? Was there fucking some weird dynamic going on in the family? Was there some sort of abusive thing that's been going on for decades? We don't know anything. That's why my comment on this was, it's a sad situation. I think all three need to get in a room. But the funny thing is, DT, they don't want to get together. Vicky doesn't want to see her daughter. And if you saw what Shaw said, she supports her sister with that, but she'd only do therapy through online because she doesn't want to physically be around her sister. Yeah. Because the last time she was physically and verbally abused.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what there is a problem circle that goes with the three of them. And everyone's just trying to say, I think it's even beyond, and I'm not dismissing the sexual assault charge. Again, we don't know what it is. And whatever it is, it's disgusting. Of course, you know, it's a stepfather. He's not a blood relative, but my God, it is supposed to be a father figure to her. And these are not young girls either. Let's point out that when this happened to this, she was 25 when this happened, or 24.
Yeah.
But I know I'm going on and on here. But like I said, just the people making the statements about Vicky as a human being. I'm like, you only know her from television. You don't know this woman. Yeah. You don't know what she's been through with this girl. And I don't know what the other girl's through, but we all have family members who have, like I said, whether addiction problems, mental problems. Like you said, Vicky was alluding to the fact that she's been a problem kid and is now a problem adult. That's a lot of stress on a family. Maybe Vicky has just reached her fucking maximum, allotment of taking this kind of abuse from a daughter. You know, DT, verbal abuse can really fucking shake you up when you take it for a long time.
Especially when you go on Instagram and make an accusation like that.
Exactly. What did she think was going to come of that? And her mother being unemployed, how does that help the family dynamic if Vicky gets axed out of her job? We're not saying that she's suffered any of those repercussions yet, because, again, there's got to be evidence. I would hope that Vicky wouldn't lose her other job. I know she went back to school and got a degree in something. But ruining her career, and then all the women wind up unemployable. How does that help anything?
Yeah, and you know what it is also? When, you know, this was another thing when Sherilyn posted this, she didn't even say it like my stepdad. She said Vicky's husband.
Yeah,
like,
strange.
She brought Vicky's name in there. You know what I mean? Like, she did say stepdad, but she kept mentioning Vicky. So obviously, since none of us know the stepdad and we don't have any evidence of the stepdad tweeting or socializing with anybody online, this was all done to get at her mother.
Yeah, it was to get out of her mother. And like I said, for her mother, well, Vicky deserves to be fired. But then what? So Vicky loses her, just say, AEW gig, and she loses her daytime job or whatever her career is, or has controversy where she's suspended until further investigation. How does that help this? And you think the mother's going to want to embrace the daughter when the daughter tries to ruin the mother's life?
No.
So, well, you picked the husband over your daughter. It's like, I don't know. Again, I think some and also the other thing, DT, everyone here in the chat knows, there are family members who know how to manipulate better than anybody else. The people who've hurt me the most, dude, no matter what, me and you are falling out, whatever happened, I broke up with girlfriends, you had a marriage that dissolved. The people that can hurt me the most, forget about anybody outside, is my own immediate family. Yes. Say shit that gets to me the most. So family knows how to really fuck with your mind and mind fuck you, because family knows how to love you, but they know how to fuck with you too.
Yeah, they know exactly how to push your buttons.
Exactly. I have never been as rattled by stuff with outside parties or friends or breakups with girls as I have within my own family dynamic. Mm-hmm. When we had bad shit together. We're good now, but when we did have bad shit together.
When wrestling fans want to rattle Vicky, all they say is Eddie was a B-plus player. When a family member wants to rattle Vicky, they accuse her husband of sexual assault.
She's with that guy, by the way, since 2013 or 2014. They got married in 2015. They've been together a while. He's not some newcomer to the house. The other thing that bothered me, DT, we'll wrap it up soon, but that when Vicky said, and people like, oh my God, he tried to buy her off, you didn't mind taking the new car that my husband bought you.
Two.
Like, what was that all? But two cars.
Yep.
So people are like, oh, my God, he paid her off. And I'm like, well, oh, my God, she accepted it. You know what I'm saying? So doesn't it go both ways?
Yeah.
She was an adult when she accepted it.
Gee.
Because people are like, the poor kid. I'm like, she's 25 years old.
Gee.
She's not a kid.
What does that sound like? Maybe somebody right now with some bad dye hair and a mustache that looks like a launch pad, like some.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I mean, doesn't that sound like, hey, you know, Vince gave millions and millions of dollars to some of these women and they decide to call the accountant instead of calling the attorney or the legal or the cops?
It's crazy. Yeah, I'll just say this. I agree with you because I'm going to get ready to get out of here. But. Yeah. You know, the whole thing, to be clear, me and you make it crystal clear so don't get twist our words. If a sexual assault happens and the sister is saying it did, then that's fucking disgusting. And I don't know. Again, I don't know what it was. Even if it was from an ass grab to an inappropriate touch, it's completely inappropriate. And why Vicky stayed with him, I don't know. We don't know what that was, what the dealing was. They said they went to therapy, but clearly there was no police action involved in what happened, right, DT?
As far as we know.
As far as we know.
Yeah. Just one quick question before I let you go. Just simple thumbs up, thumbs down. You know, you and I talked about Cody and where this was going, and it was a little too soon for him to take the belt off of Roman and the 1,000 days, same day as King of the Ring, and then you got SummerSlam, and you got some big events coming up. Cody issued the challenge yesterday to Brock for Backlash. Where this is going so far for you, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Thumbs up. I want to see. I think Cody Brock is a great matchup. I would have never thought of it until I saw Brock attack him. I didn't even put those two on a possibility of meeting up. So I like the matchup. I thought Cody gave a good promo last night. Some people thought it was good. Some people didn't like it. I liked it. I liked how Cody knows how to handle a WWE audience because he's still over and there was no booze. And he even said, listen, I'm sorry. I failed. I'll do better for you in the future. That's what he needed to say. He goes, but now on to my biggest problem right now. In other words, Roman Reigns to the side right now. Here's the problem in front of me that I got to tackle. Exactly. That's great. And guess what? His father used to do the same thing in the NWA. Ric Flair would be to the side. You know why? Because Tully Blanchard and Baby Doll just attacked him on TV the other day. Exactly. So now he's got another problem to deal with.
Perfectly said.
And I loved it. And I think Cody's doing a good job. And again, I was never a Cody hater. I'm more of a Reigns fan. But I like what they're doing with him. But they're like, but Kev, what if he loses to Brock? Maybe there'll be a series of matches. And listen, losing to Brock Lesnar is not that bad of a thing. He's one of the greatest of all time. And he's still very believable, Brock. Brock is not like Greg Valentine. No offense to Greg Valentine. But he's not like Greg Valentine. Brock is still, look at this guy. Yeah. You know, there's a graphic film put up of him. But I think Cody will get the win. It'll be part one, you know, the next adversity, as we use that word before and other people use the word, that Cody has to face. And as you said, what is old is new again. By the way, watch the Dusty Rhodes documentary. I know DT probably didn't have time to watch it yet. Yeah. That aired on A&E. It was fantastic. And you want to talk about Easter eggs and little seeds planted, go watch a lot of the things that they talk about the Rhodes boys, about their dad and how he booked and how stories would play out and how Dusty was always behind the eight ball but always fought, came back, and that people kept coming back, and that's why he was beloved, because he was a fighter.
We're seeing Dusty Rhodes all over again, just in better shape.
All over again,
just in better shape. And no polka dots.
Watch the documentary, guys, if you want to see what me and DT we've been alluding to last week about what's old is becoming new again. And if you're not a historian or an enthusiast, you know, go and watch this, and you'll be like, yeah, I see. Cody's almost subliminally telling us there's a lot more of his story to go, that it doesn't end with the loss to Roman. And that thing was taped a while ago, but this was, again, this was all in the works for a year, DT, I would say.
Yes. Absolutely. Brock versus Cody was planned months ago.
Yep, it was. It was planned months ago.
Have a good one, Kev. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, everybody. Catch you soon. Peace.
Be well. Yeah, I mean, Kev couldn't have said it any better, everyone. You know, after Kev and I had this discussion 2 weeks ago with the WrestleMania recap, and for some of you out there, if you have not checked out our recap yet, I know we all know the results of WrestleMania, but Kev and I had some tremendous conversation about the fallout for WrestleMania and what could happen and what will happen. And, you know, I had that, you know, late night epiphany that this is the Four Horsemen and Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes all over again. You could even say Sami Zayn has been a little bit treated like Sting when Sting was going to be in the Horsemen and he got kicked out. But, you know, some people were bringing up, you know, Sting feuding with Ric Flair in the night. Listen, you know, I want to make something clear. What we're not saying is that this is clear-cut Dusty all over again. No, what we're saying is that this is inspired by Dusty Rhodes. And listen, putting this documentary on a week after WrestleMania is extremely strategic. Very strategic. Because like father, like son, why wouldn't you take advice and traits from your father? There's things that I say and do on an everyday basis that is based on my mother, my grandmother, my father, the way I was brought up, the way, you know, I should handle things. My wife now influences me a lot in what I say and what I don't say. You know, I'm very, very boring sometimes online. And listen, I'm not going to deny it. I've seen it. I've seen some of you out there. Some of you have returned over the last couple of months or couple of weeks. You know, some of you a while back, you know, I got sick and tired of DT always complaining about goofy podcasters. I got sick and tired of DT always talking about politics. I got sick and tired of DT always, you know, calling this out or putting this down. And I'm with you. I'm with you. But you learn and you grow. And the one thing, and this is why we're kind of like blown away with what we see online right now, is that you see people who went from rational to radical. And you know that it's strategic because some of the biggest, most successful podcasters out there are more about the criticizing part of pro wrestling than the praising part of pro wrestling. And I have complained about things over the years that, you know, if you give praise to something, you're labeled a WWE dick sucker. If you praise something else, you're an AEW neckbeard. If you criticize, you know, like there's no middle ground, and middle ground is boring. A lot of people out there, listen, life sucks many times. The world is not as good as it used to be. The economy is kind of shitty. Wrestling has its peaks and valleys. So, you know, basically what wrestling has become, especially social media, is like a stress ball. That's really what it's become. Like we have these stress balls at home that you get a little bit of stress, you know, like, oh, somebody calls you up and, you know, keeps bothering you and you grab that ball like, and you just want to squeeze it. And you see wrestling and you see little things that you don't like. And listen, Dominic Mysterio yesterday, when he was cutting the promo on his dad, you could tell clear as day that he was told to specifically say a couple of things. And Dominic slipped up a couple of times because he was thinking, trying to think. And it's so obvious because we've noticed it over the years. Some wrestlers have the freedom to improvise and say what they want out there. Cody Rhodes is probably a great example of that. Some other wrestlers, they have to have bullet points. You got to make sure you do this. And listen, for Dominic, I don't blame WWE for making him stick to the script because he is still extremely young in his career. And if you notice, Dominic is learning on the job. And if you hear him, even his cadence has changed. You see, Dad, you need to keep my name out of your mouth. You are a dead beat. Like, you could even hear his cadence has changed. So he needs that guidance. But the problem is, any little thing that you feel is, you know, something that just gets under your skin, especially over the years, you just want to squeeze that stress ball. And a lot of people online, you know, wrestling, social media, whatever it is become a stress ball. But, you know, again, Kevin and I are not saying that this is 100% Four Horsemen, Ric Flair. You know, Ric Flair is Roman Reigns and the Horsemen is the Usos and Solo Sikoa. And, you know, what we're saying is that it is inspired. And it should be inspired. Why wouldn't Cody not want to get inspiration from his dad? Why wouldn't Cody want to learn from his dad? You know, this special was strategic. And yes, I am absolutely watching it tonight. Because like we said when we opened the show, it's not how big your pee-pee is, it's how you use it. So this show tonight is not how long it is, it's what you do with it. And, you know, that's the mindset that we've always had doing shows. You know, I know back in the day we used to do 2-3-4 hour bangers. And yeah, I know it kills the time and it's fun and this and that. But, you know, sometimes, especially when you do a lot of content, you know, you stick around that long. That's where you start rambling. And that's usually when you start getting into things that turn people off and they're like, all right, I think I've had enough for today. So we want to stay on topic. And we want to keep going. By the way, the Dusty Rhodes biography rating did a pretty damn good number. 461,000 viewers. That was Sunday's biography of Dusty Rhodes. And the reason why I have the ratings in front of me is because I have the weekly ratings that I normally do on Mondays. But since I was still, you know, on vacation, technically, I got back late yesterday. And I could have done a show last night, but it would have been super, super rushed. And honestly, it would have sucked. And, you know, I'm not one that I finish a show and I'm like, oh, that was a banger. I mean, sometimes, you know, if I do a show with someone else, I'll feel like, oh, we had a great conversation. Absolutely. But I know last night would have sucked. But, you know, I did put the ratings aside to share with everybody for this week. And, you know, a few of you have asked, like, hey, could you include, you know, the A&E shows when we get into ratings. So from now on, as long as they're on, we'll get into them. So let me quickly give you the ratings for the past week. You know, I'll tell you, I think WrestleMania had an influence on all the shows across the board. I think people were in a much bigger wrestling frame of mind. I think casual fans felt like watching a little bit more wrestling than usual because everybody across the board seem to have been up. Now, not every single show, but quite a bit were on the increase last week. Now, I expect Raw last night to have a big dip for the simple reason that we're now a week removed from WrestleMania. You know, the night after WrestleMania is over with, and as we talked about last week, there's a lot of Raw after WrestleManias that have sucked. I brought up last week the Sheamus Randy Orton match that's legendary, the night that Brock Lesnar returned and annihilated John Cena. You know, you go back and you watch those episodes leading up to those moments, they were very, very cringe. And look, the Randy Orton Sheamus match, that wasn't really a highlight. That was a highlight for the wrong reasons that night. That's how bored the fans were. It made it a memorable moment because of how inept it was. But here's your ratings over the past week. Let's go from earliest to most recent. Raw last week, 2,260,000 viewers. That is the night after Mania. That is way up from the previous week's 1,843,000. The high point from last week's Raw was the Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, Brock Lesnar segment to open up Raw. That did 2,598,000 viewers. Almost 2,600,000 viewers for a Raw. That is excellent. The low point of last week, unfortunately, was once again the women's match. Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez versus Damage Control in the number one contenders match. That did 1,966,000. Still a decent number overall. But, you know, hey, you know, a lot of people, it's politically incorrect to say it in 2023. But you look at a lot of shows and more times than not, the women's matches seem to get the lowest of ratings. Just calling it like we see it. MLW last week did 48,000 viewers. That is slightly down from the week prior's 54,000. NXT last week did 555,000 viewers. That is down from the week prior's 620,000. AEW All Access last week did 328,000 viewers. That's only a couple of thousand less from the week before. I don't have the debuts numbers, but I know it was around the middle threes. So, they're averaging like 320 to 350. I think we kind of expected that for All Access. Dynamite last week did 877,000 viewers. That was slightly up from the week prior, is 833. The high point from last week was the MJF Jungle Boy pull apart right after MJF's Pennies from Heaven performance and Sammy Guevara versus Commander. That did 921,000 viewers. The low quarter, the low point of last week, guys, very, very interesting. Now, Wednesday, I am doing a Wednesday Night Dynamite. It'll be a little bit abbreviated as I get back into the swing of things. But, you know, we talked about it last week. The low point of the week prior's Dynamite, the lowest rated part of the show, was Adam Cole's in-ring return that only did like 730,000 viewers. That was shocking. If you want to continue that, the low point of last week's Dynamite was FTR winning the tag team championships off of the Guns, 784,000 viewers. Think about that for a minute. There was a lot of people that thought that FTR was done with AEW. And, you know, it felt like if you followed their social media, the days leading up to the match, it felt like they were going to stay. But there was a lot of people that thought that FTR was leaving. Their last match, as in a lot of people's eyes, it didn't pop a rating. It was the lowest part of the whole night. Do you blame that on the Guns? No, I don't think so. Just like you don't blame the week prior to Daniel Garcia. Why is that? That for the main event, that the numbers are the lowest of the night. This is not a 3-hour Raw. This is a 2-hour show. And a lot of people felt that Dynamite last week was pretty damn good. And there was a little bit of suspense to that main event for FTR. And you're not going to hear this conversation. You might hear Cornette and Brian Last talk about it because they will be brutally honest about this ship. You're not going to hear this on other shows. You hear anybody else bring to attention FTR, the lowest rating of last week's show? You don't hear that. That's a little bit concerning, especially when we talk about AEW and Wembley Stadium. You know, I posted a picture for, I already started setting up the show for Wednesday night. But for my Patreon friends that are there right now, I'm going to post the thumbnail in the chat room. All right. Dave Meltzer last week said that if AEW All In draws 30%, if they fill up the Wembley Stadium by 30%, that's a success. That picture that I just posted, which you will all see on Wednesday, believe it or not, that is Rihanna's concert in Wembley Stadium that had 50% turnout. You look at that picture and you tell me with all honesty that that looks like a success. You do not book a 90,000 seat building to fill it up 30%. You take a 35,000 seat building and you fill it to 100% because the optics just made, that's what Impact Wrestling used to do. That, with all due respect, I mean, I don't know if it was Bubba Ray that was doing it at the time. We always heard it was Bubba Ray that was in charge of that. But they were booking these stadium shows that we used to make fun of all the time. It would be 5,000 seat minor league stadiums and they draw 200. And that's an exaggeration, obviously. But even if they drew 1,000, why would you want the optics of a building only being 20% full or 30% full? So, you know, you look at that. Now you say to yourself, is CM Punk really going to fill up 30, 40, 50,000 seats? You know, it's something you really got to start thinking about. You know, but FTR having the lowest rating last week was kind of startling, to be honest with you. New Japan last week did 69,000 viewers. That is slightly up from the week prior, 66. Impact Wrestling last week did 117,000 viewers. That's pretty good for them. That's up from the week prior, 98,000. Battle of the Belts last week did 415,000. The last Battle of the Belts was on January 6th. That did 409. Rampage last week did 503,000. That's a nice increase from the week prior, 340. That is a nice increase for Rampage. SmackDown last week did 2,468,000. That is slightly down from the week prior, 2,484,000. And as I said earlier, Dusty Rhodes on Biography did 461. And at A&E Rivals, featuring The Undertaker and Randy Orton, did 427,000. A few of you have asked me what I thought about the AEW, I keep saying AEW, A&E Rivals. I'm not too thrilled of it. You know, this is not the WWE Network when they used to have the round table, you know, the Legends of Wrestling or whatever they used to. Remember those Mean Gene Oakland used to be in it, Michael Hayes, and you had others. Those were awesome. Mick Foley was on a few of them. This, I don't know. I don't like this round table that they do. And look, I'm not one of those, well, you know, so-and-so was not there to witness it, so, or he wasn't even alive at the time, so he shouldn't be talking about it. I'm not one of those that's going to say that. But the round table, you know, some of them are pretty weak. I see some clips of it, and I'm like, nah. Yeah, they could do so much better. And there's legends out there that are not under exclusive AEW deal that they could bring aboard. I don't know why they don't utilize them. There's so many legends out there that you could utilize. Utilize them. They're not going to demand crazy amounts of money. I know why they don't do that. Because they think, oh, well, if we could get, you know, a current WWE wrestler on the panel, that might be more of an attraction or might incline current viewers to want to see that person talk about a legend from yesteryear. But if they bring aboard a legend that is out of touch or isn't really around TV anymore, I mean, who's going to tune in? The 50-year-olds, the 60-year-olds, the 70-year-olds. So I get why they do it. But I personally think, you know, I'm not a fan of the round tables that they do with those. Just something random that I got a kick out of. Natalya did an interview with Chris Van Vliet. She was asked for her Mount Rushmore of Canadian wrestlers. She did not include herself, which I find very respectful, but you know was heavily influenced by the Hart family. Her Mount Rushmore of Canadian wrestlers is Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Stu Hart, and Edge. That was her Mount Rushmore for wrestlers. So most of you out there, AEW Dynamite would have already been off the air, so we're not going to really get into previews. But I am looking forward to seeing what they do with Keith Lee and Chris Jericho. I think Keith Lee's Mordecai-inspired outfit, I think that will be history. Yeah, I don't know what was going on with that. I don't even know why that was done. Maybe it was done to just get a buzz, get some conversation out of it. But, you know, on paper, Dynamite looks okay tomorrow, with the exception of the Blackpool Combat Club against Brandon Cutler and Michael Nakazawa. You know, you already know what's going to happen on that match. It's going to be a squash, and then they're going to continue to beat down, and then we're probably going to see Kenny Omega come out, and then we'll probably see Hangman Page come out, and then it'll probably be like a, you know, the Blackpool walk back off, like, and then it'll be another awkward moment with Hangman Page and Kenny Omega, and you know the deal. Okay, I have to start bringing this energy down a little bit because it is almost 11:30 here, and I am still not going to lie. You know, when you'd be surprised when you do a show almost every day of the week, and then you don't do one for 6 days. It actually does feel a little bit awkward when you come back. I mean, you know, I'm just having conversation. We're just talking about whatever, but you know, it still feels a little bit awkward. But, you know, the idea is, like I said, to really just keep the conversations tight, strong, good topics. And, you know, again, you know, we're not trying to throw shade on anybody online, what we said earlier. But you see all the nonsense and the noise online about, you know, Vince backing creative and this and that. You know, listen, when people start including Endeavor in the conversation, Endeavor's the boss. Endeavor is majority ownership. Endeavor is the boss. And just because the deal has not been officially transferred over yet doesn't mean that they don't have influence right now. Anything that is happening behind the scenes has Endeavor's blessing. Vince McMahon is not going to turn around and take an $11 billion merger and turn around and start doing political power and start doing things that Endeavor is not aware of or doesn't approve of simply to feed his ego. It's just common sense. You know, it doesn't take a college graduate to figure that out. And they gave Triple H a $5 million bonus. You think they did that just for optics? You think they did that? Yeah, you know, he had a heart attack and he ain't going to be around that long. So he'll give it to his kids and, you know, we'll write it off. It's not going to really affect us. You know, we'll raise our, you know, prices a dollar. No, they paid him $5 million because he has a lot of duties. But whatever is done, it is at the blessing of Endeavor. Endeavor is going to be the majority owner. And I hate using politics as an analogy. I don't like talking politics anymore. But when you just look at Republicans and Democrats, when one has a 51-49 majority, that's it. That's it. At the end of the day, everybody in WWE could take a certain view. And if Endeavor says, nope, we want Vince in charge, that's it. They're the ones that make the final decision. And just because the ink hasn't dried yet doesn't mean that they have no influence right now. And a lot of people out there are just ignoring that. And I think that is intentional. People aren't that stupid. So, all right, you know what? I'll include these in for everybody. You know, we have some questions from some of our VIPers, associate producers, and Hall of Famers on Patreon. And some of these questions, I think, are some nice discussion that we can include for the show. So I will include these for everybody as well. Shout out to Roger Rubio. What are some feuds that I can see Bayley having in the near future? It looks like to him that the breakup of Damage Control is impending. He thinks that'll lead to some great matches. I personally want to see Io Sky and Bayley. And I want to see them go 15 minutes. I know that is asking for a lot. Give me 10 minutes. I'll be happy with that as well. But, you know, understand something. And I think a lot of people forget this at the end of the day. Bayley is very close with Damage Control. Not because they've just been a faction since SummerSlam, but they are friendly. They are very, very close behind the scenes. Always, when you think about feuds, and you think about breakups, whenever I think about, you know what I always think about? I think about the Click. I think about the Click in the 90s when Razor would feud with the 1-2-3 Kid, when Diesel would go after Razor. Like, they were on TV and house shows fighting against each other. But that's who you want to face. Like, tell me, seriously, if you all were pro wrestlers, you mean to tell me, other than having an opponent to make you a lot of money, tell me you wouldn't love to be able to fight some of your closest friends. You know, to be able to have matches with some of your closest friends. Someone that you know is not going to, you know, like, go against the grain to try to, like, you know, boost their own worth and leave. You know what I mean? Like, I fucking loved doing what I did back in the day with Louie. And then when I became friends with a few people in VPW and, you know, having, you know, people doing what they would, I fucking loved it. Because afterwards, you go to the Knights of Columbus in a bar and you're drinking and we're going out to eat and this and that. We're laughing up a storm and we're having fun. And it's you want to break bread with your closest friends and family. So even if Damage Control breaks up, you know, understand that Bayley is going to love going at it with Io Sky. She's going to love going at it with Dakota Kai. Dakota Kai, we don't know if she is going to still be aligned with Io Sky. They both may end up going their separate ways. You might have infighting amongst all three. Hell, I just had a brainstorm. That wasn't a fart, by the way. That's my water bottle. We might see a three-way. We might see Bayley versus Io Sky versus Dakota Kai. I won't be surprised if that's a match we see on an upcoming Raw or maybe on one of these pay-per-views. Damage Control fighting. Why not? Personally, I think if Mandy Rose would have never been released, I think we might have had a three-way with Toxic Attraction fighting against each other. So in the immediate future, I could see that happening with Bayley. And yes, we talked earlier about Bayley possibly, you know, teaming up with Trish if they go that route with her being a heel. I predict Bayley ultimately will be a babyface, but she will not be the clear-cut hugger like she was back in the day. She will still have that attitude. She will still be a little bit snide, but the fans will still warm up to her, and she will be snide towards the heels. That'll happen in the near future. So, David Peralta, since WrestleMania 40 will be in Philly next year, he feels and sees Tommy Dreamer being inducted in the Hall of Fame, not just to celebrate the 30th anniversary of ECW, but everything that Tommy has done for people outside the ring and behind the scenes for the wrestling business. Tommy Dreamer in the WWE Hall of Fame, yeah, that would be great, but I think Paul Heyman needs to go in. I think if you're going to put anybody that exudes ECW, I mean, look, you think of Rob Van Dam, but Rob Van Dam ironed out a pretty fucking awesome WWE career. Tommy Dreamer had a memorable WWE run, but for me, when I look at Tommy Dreamer, I'll always think of ECW. I have no problem with Tommy Dreamer going into Hall of Fame. Yeah, I'm still disturbed about the story he told of, you know, how depressed he was in like 01, something that he thought about doing. We're not going to bring it up on the show over here. That always really shook me, you know, but I've gone, you know, I've obviously moved on from that because obviously Tommy Dreamer has moved on from it and he's in a good place. So yeah, I am 100% on board with Tommy Dreamer putting the WWE Hall of Fame. And I will say this, I will continue saying it. You know, if you would have said to me, maybe not necessarily 1993, because Tommy Dreamer was still wearing the singlet and the, you know, the very ugly like purple tights and all that. But if you would have said to me in 1995 that 28 years later in 2023, Tommy Dreamer would still be doing this on a pretty regular basis, I would have said, you're fucking nuts. I would have thought that he would have retired for 15 years and then come back. I never in a million years would have ever thought that Bully Ray and Tommy Dreamer would still be doing it this hard in 2023. That is awesome. I don't care what history I have back in the day with Bubba Ray, with the TNA stuff. We don't need to revisit that. But that is fucking awesome that these guys could still do it. Think about that, 30 years. 30, not 20, not 15, 30. We have some of the most in-ring technical wrestlers that never went 30 years. And they made it to 30. That's crazy. And I say that as a compliment. Kyle Kaczmarski, happy 30th. He will be celebrating his 30th birthday on Saturday. What were some of my favorite birthdays? Oof, 21, 18. Well, actually, you know what? 18, yeah, 18 was okay. 21 was great. I still remember what I did, where I was. I met my ex-girlfriend, and, you know, we don't want to get into the full-blown story because a lot of people won't be interested in it, but I'll tell you a quick story. I went to a bar on Hampstead Turnpike. It was actually like a club. I don't remember the name of it. But me and my friend Joey, we have the same birthday. We were both born March 27th. So I turned 21. He was 2 years younger than me, but he had fake ID. We went to this bar in Hempstead, Queens, Hempstead Turnpike, and I met my ex-girlfriend Kristen there. And what happened was we were celebrating, and I took all my money that I had, and we bought champagne, and we bought drinks. And there was a couple of girls just hanging out. And we're like, hey, it's our birthday. You want a drink? And I'm like, yeah. And we started passing around drinks and everything. And next thing I know, I started fooling around with this girl. You know, it was innocent, just some kissing or whatever. And then I find out that she's only 18. Now, yes, that's no pedophile. I'm 21. She's 18. There's nothing wrong with that. But drinking-wise, it's 21 to drink. She got kicked out of the club. I got kicked out of the club. I almost got in trouble for giving an underage person alcohol, even though she was 18. So I ended up meeting my ex-girlfriend. And believe me when I tell you, her family thought that we would ultimately get married. This is the same girl that I told you all a story years later that we hooked up again. And she was dancing on the top of a bar table and she was all like zooted out on shit. And I said, oh, I'm going to go to my car, get a pack of cigarettes. And I just drove away and never saw her ever again. She turned out to be a whack job, but I showed a picture on one of the old Sunday shows that we did when I first started doing video. So she was the typical, put it this way. If you picture an 18-year-old JC Jane that's what she looked like. She looked, that's why I always thought JC Jane would be perfect for Tony D'Angelo's group, because she reminds me of my ex-girlfriend, and my ex-girlfriend was Italian, 100% Italian. She had the same kind of hair like JC Jane, the same look. The only difference was she was from the 90s, so she dressed like 90s. But JC Jane, that's why I always thought she would be the ultimate, like, cousinette. If anybody knows the term cousinette, Guidette, maybe some people know Guidette. But yeah, so that's probably my favorites. His favorite birthdays are 10 and 18. That's cool. Who uses VPNs and why? Well, I use it so I don't have to pay crazy amount of money for AEW pay-per-views. I don't care who gets mad at that. I find that bullshit that somebody in the UK pays like less than half than what I have to pay in the United States. Bullshit. Bullshit. You know, if I could get the VPN on and go on one of these streaming services and they think I'm in the UK and I only have to pay like $20 for it, that's what I'm going to do it for. Honestly, that's it. Plain and simple. That's the only, I know people use it for other security reasons. Everybody uses it for different reasons. But, you know, I'm sorry. I feel that I am just as much of a wrestling fan as someone is in China or Italy or the UK or Australia or Brooklyn or wherever. And you're going to turn around and you're going to say to me that someone else should only pay. Now, if you're in a country that doesn't even have internet, yeah, it's like a third world country and they make like $5 a day. All right, I understand why you charge them a lot less. But don't fucking say to me that somebody in the UK, and I'm nothing against anybody in the UK, but if you're going to turn around and you're going to say to me that just because somebody lives somewhere else, they pay half the price, no, fuck that. Then I'm paying half the price too. That's it. Liam Savage, he was curious. Do I still feel the same excitement for wrestling like I did that I always have? He finds very little of it that he's interested in now because it's changed so much and gotten goofy and recycled in a lot of ways. To be honest with you, Liam, wrestling has been recycled since the beginning of wrestling time. There were things in the 70s that were recycled in the 90s. There were things in the AWA that was recycled in the WWF. Everybody thinks that, you know, Piper's Pit was something revolutionary in WWF. You had Heenan feuding with Hogan and other places. I mean, those are kind of not the greatest examples, but pro wrestling has been recycled so many times over the years. You know, you just, you know, you have to adapt to it. You know, do I have the same excitement that when I was a kid? No, because when you're a kid, it's a lot more innocent. When you start, you know, learning the inside of the business, it's fascinating. You know, when you get the opportunity to do a little bit of work within the business, it's spectacular. So, yeah, there's a lot that I miss from back in the day. Even doing my crappy indie wrestling managing stuff. You know, to me, I should have taken better care of my body. Back then, I should have appreciated a little bit more. Even though I worked hard, I should have worked even harder. And I miss those times. But, you know, I personally try to see the glass half full than half empty. Well, half empty than half full. I feel that, you know, there's always room for improvement. I'm not going to be one of those. And listen, we're not going to name any names out there. But there's some people out there that are copying some of my friends in the podcasting world who do criticize. And I'll throw one out there. There's a lot of people that are trying to use JD's template. The difference that these people have a problem with that they'll never figure it out is there's a difference between these people that are trying to use JD's template. JD offers solutions. And the problem is if you're not smart and you're trying to intentionally rip on everything all of a sudden, and there's a couple of people out there in the podcasting world that it's so fucking blatant. You look at their thumbnails. Even the font that they use is the same as JD. And I'm watching this from afar, and I'm like, oh, that is so cute. The difference is JD offers solutions. I know JD is not for everybody, but he offers solutions. And a lot of these Nimrods out there don't offer solutions. And, you know, me, I just try to look at things in a positive way. And I don't care if it if I lose or I don't get as big in the numbers as I should. Yes, it's easy to shit on things and you get a lot of, oh, I feel the same way and blah, 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 blah. I try to offer solutions. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of like getting the DMs or the emails or the shout outs from people within the wrestling world, the wrestling business. They're like, hey, man, check out your shit. Love it. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't change a damn thing. Keep doing, you know, appreciate the hustle. Keep doing, keep saying what you're saying. You got a fan with me. You know, and these are some of these people are Hall of Famers. And I'm like, man, that fucking feels good. I will take that over somebody agreeing with me because I shit on Vince McMahon any day of the week. Any day of the week. Even the AEW stuff. Even the AEW stuff. Speaking of AEW, Kyle had another question before. Considering how much AEW was inspired and influenced by PWG, why haven't AEW and PWG done a show together? Because yesteryear's PWG is not what this year's PWG is. Just because it is inspired by it doesn't mean that you automatically do a deal. I personally think that AEW has always been inspired more by Ring of Honor and ECW. ECW with the mindset, with the chaos, with the expect the unexpected, and I know that's an WWE phrase, but you know, back in the day with ECW, experience the difference. There's a lot about AEW that really reminds me a lot of ECW, where they fail, and I brought this up 1,000 times in the past, where AEW fails is they don't present or push the climate that ECW used to do. And I'm sorry if I'm repeating something I've said before, but it's one of my fondest memories of ECW. Going to Philly, going to the ECW arena, going to these rinky-dink fucking almost bar-type atmospheres, going to gyms, watching ECW, wearing some New York jerseys. Back in the day, I would wear my Mets jerseys. I would wear, you know, whatever. And you'd have these Pennsylvania guys, oh, we got some New Yorkers over here. Hey, you got some New Yorkers over here. Ah, fucking New York. And 99 out of 100 times, hey, you know, who, you know, come over, have a beer. You want a beer? You know, who do you like in this match? They embraced everybody. That's why you go back and you watch ECW events from the ECW arena. How many times did you actually see fans brawling in the crowd? How many times did you actually ever hear New Yorkers fighting with Philly guys or vice versa? You didn't. And trust me, I was there. That's the difference. Back in the day, I'd go to an ECW event, you bump into, you know, even if you were not a big ECW fan and you're just learning, you're just experiencing it, you're rather new to the product, hey, come over. The water's warm. There's room for everybody. Smelled like shit. Everybody smelled like armpits, and some people did not wash their crotch in weeks. It smelled awful in there. I couldn't understand how any women would want to go there. And it's not a heterosexual or homosexual thing. It's just women, you know, would be surrounded by body odor of men, and you just smell it, and it's just like, it's awful. It's worse than like a gym. It's worse than like a toilet that hasn't been flushed in a month. And people didn't care. They just want to have a good time. And that's where the line is drawn with AEW. AEW, it's more militant. There is a culture online that you have to know history. You have to be anti-WWE. Everything has to be epic, amazing, unbelievable. The hair on my arm is lifted up. That everything is the greatest of all time. And 5 stars, 7 stars, 10 stars. This match was so good. I think I got, you know, there was a little moisture in my underoos. Like, you know, and if you didn't go along with that, you know, oh, you know, you were outcast. That's the big difference. And no one in AEW, I mean, some wrestlers don't push the negative narrative, but you see too many wrestlers in AEW that does not say, hey, guys, come on. You know, we want everybody to have a good time. Come on. You know, we could be better than that. That's not nobody fucking, nobody that matters in AEW does that. And that's awful. And that's what turns me off with AEW a lot. you know, when that atmosphere is very friction, you know, a lot of friction, and it feels like if you criticize something, like everybody ignores you, I'm like, you know what? Fuck you then. Crazy Cruise Weight is in the house. Eat, save, burn. Coleslaw, mashed potatoes, macaroni, and cheese. I would eat the mac and cheese. Yeah, I would eat the mac and cheese. The mashed potatoes I would save. Mashed potato. You know what? I would eat the mashed potatoes. I would save the macaroni and cheese because macaroni and cheese. No, you know what? I take that back. Macaroni and cheese, if you keep it in the refrigerator, it turns into like a chunk. And especially when the cheese hardens, you can't like eat it. Mashed potatoes, you could, Kentucky Fried Chicken mashed potatoes, cold in the refrigerator, still good. Coleslaw I would burn. I love coleslaw, but in fact, you know what? This could be the Kentucky Fried Chicken version. Coleslaw, mashed potatoes, macaroni and cheese. All three are pretty freaking epic in KFC. I'm still pissed that KFC got rid of the potato wedges. I had their french fries not too long ago, and I was extremely disappointed. Extremely disappointed. Oh, man, it was so disappointing. But, yeah, no, I would eat the macaroni and cheese. I would save the mashed potatoes. I'd burn the coleslaw. Do I remember this old New York State drunk driving commercial and how sad it got real quickly? Yes, I can't play it for everyone. But, you know, back in the day, you know, those drunk driving commercials that New York used to air. Let me tell you something. The drunk driving commercials, you know, that those, the smokers commercials, even Smokey the Bear, you know, like don't smoke or I forget. Or even when you pollute. Anybody that is my age remembers back in the day, they would show like some Indian on TV. And it would be like really slow motion and they're doing like a profile on his face and yeah, there's really sad music and everything. And because there's like litter on the floor, he's got this big tear coming down his eye. I'm like, fuck you. Don't cry. Clean it up, moron. I would watch that commercial and you see like litter on the floor. If you've never seen those commercials, go on YouTube. Just type in crying Indian garbage and you'll see it. And I'm like, he's always crying, but I don't see him picking up the garbage. You know, he just leaves it there and cries. Wah, wah, wah. I don't like those commercials. I don't like the drinking. Listen, the drinking driving ones, obviously they're trying to send a message. The ones that disturb me the most right now are the smokers ones. Because they will actually show you on TV someone who lost their voice box. You'll have someone on TV that'll just cough up. And they're like, there's one. I don't remember if it aired on WWE programming, but there was one that it would air repeatedly throughout the evening and the guy would just cough and he would like start like almost throwing up. And you know the commercial I'm talking about. I'm like, oh, that's just way too over the top. You know, the mother who's like on her deathbed and like half her face is gone and she's like next to her kid. I'm like, all right, that's a little bit much. That's a little bit much. All right, thank you, Cruiserweight. Mitchell Davies, he wants to know my opinion. How much creative do I really think Vince has? Yeah, well, Kevin and I talked about that earlier. Listen, people need to get used to it. Stop denying it. Stop acting shocked by it. Vince McMahon has creative influence. Endeavor likes Vince McMahon's final say in a lot of creative decisions. Triple H will, you listen, some of these WrestleMania matches were definitely inspired by Vince McMahon. I don't doubt that in the least. Saudi Arabia, you don't like it, and a lot of people don't like it. They get $50 million for a Saudi Arabia event. That is twice as much money they made at WrestleMania. Think about that. You build up WrestleMania for almost a year. In Saudi Arabia, one night, they get twice the amount of money. So when you see what Vince generates for this company, people don't like it because they see this 80-year-old, you know, like, you know, conniver, you know, womanizer, has so much money and gets away with a lot of shit that you and I would probably lose our careers over in our relationships. That is the world of millionaires and billionaires, everyone. But understand this, you know, whether people like it or not, if Vince McMahon was not in charge, we would not have what we have today with WWE. And there is a lot that needs improvement, without question. But I would rather have, if I read you the entire WWE roster right now, I would rather have a company that is able to afford to pay all of these people, and hopefully everybody ends up knocking it out of the park. Everybody gets their WrestleMania moment. Everybody gets the This Is Awesome chant. Everybody entertains the fuck out of me. I'd rather have somebody like that behind the whole ball of wax than to have someone who has a lot of money but doesn't have experience in wrestling, like Endeavor. What happens? Listen, Vince McMahon might be gone 5 years from now. He might be dead. What happens then? You know, as of now, Endeavor likes Vince in charge. So if you're going to remain a WWE fan, take the good and the bad, you have to accept the fact Vince McMahon has this power. If you don't like it, complain to Endeavor. Don't complain to Twitter. Don't complain to Vince. Don't complain to Triple H. Don't insist that, you know, this. Go to Endeavor and say, why the fuck do you keep this guy in charge? And you see nobody doing that, because I truly believe that somebody, Endeavor, will ultimately turn around and say, hey, go fuck yourself. Endeavor is, listen, I think WWE goes back to TV-14 programming down the line. You know, is UFC for kids? No. You think of their product, the Slap TV bullshit, that Slapfest show. Is that for kids? No. This Disney's not buying this. You know, the Muppets are not buying this. The Kids Network is not buying this. You know, the company responsible for UFC is buying this. So if it goes TV 14 in the future, or if they keep Vince in power, they can do whatever the fuck they want. And people think that if they make petitions, that they might create change. You think Endeavor is going to turn around and say, hey, you know, there's a lot of heat online that, you know, the people are not happy that Vince is in charge. Maybe we should do it. No, they're like, look at these holy fucking weirdos online. Fucking, you know, calling for Vince's head. Yeah, we get it. You don't like him. But you know what? He produces results and we want him in power. I don't agree with everything that Vince does. There's a lot that I don't like about Vince. But, you know, to turn around and to just turn a blind eye to why he's doing what he's doing, I think that's where a lot of people get it wrong online. Complain, complain, complain. Wine, 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 wine. Would you like wine with that cheese? Would you like cheese with that wine? That's what I should have said. All right, we got three more in the question department. Well, it's more than three questions, but three contributors. And then we're going to call it. Rams fan, where would I book the Trish versus Becky match? Backlash, King or Queen of the Ring, Money in the Bank, or SummerSlam? Well, if they're going to do Trish versus Lita, I would do that at King and Queen in the Ring for Saudi money. They both get a big payday. They deserve it. They earned it over the years. They didn't get those kind of paydays back in the day. Yes, they would get it off of posters and some, you know, risque content. But now to have one match and make that kind of money, shit. You know, they will put it all on the line out there. But if Trish versus Lita does not happen and they just go straight to Trish versus Becky, then I would like to see Trish versus Becky at SummerSlam. SummerSlam is not that far away. The only problem is SummerSlam, even though it's not that far away, it's far away enough that what do you do with Trish in the meantime? Trish is not going to be wrestling on a regular basis. Trish, if you looked closely yesterday, and yes, a lot of people think that that match was just put together last minute, but it really wasn't. But she can do enough, but she ain't going to knock it out of the park. And Becky is going to sell like $1 million for Trish. But, you know, when do you do it? If you do it too soon, then that's it. King and Queen of the Ring is in May. So I personally think you do Trish versus Lita first. She attacked Lita. Lita wants a little revenge. Trish and Lita, King, Queen of the Ring. That leads to Trish versus Becky at SummerSlam. That's kind of where I would go with that. And I'm not even convinced that that would actually be good enough. But I will say this. I think Trish and Lita are real enough that if they thought they couldn't deliver, I don't think they would have come back. I truthfully believe that both think that they have enough that they could still do. And Lita's kind of proven it. So it's really not on Lita. I think it's more on Trish. He knows it's 4 months away, but would I still have MJF still holding the belt going into the Wembley show? Yeah, I would. I actually would. 4 months is not as long as you think in AEW terms, because they don't do pay-per-views every month. So you have Double or Nothing. I don't know what you have between Double or Nothing and All In. But yeah, I would have no problem with MJF still holding the title by then. I think you're going to see MJF versus Kenny Omega at some point. I think that could still happen. I feel that they're really going out of their way to give a lot of high-profile matches for Kenny Omega, especially if he decides to leave at the end of the year. Although I kind of, right now, have the feeling that Kenny Omega is going to stay in AEW. I think Kenny Omega might be Tony Khan's MVP behind the scenes. I know some people think that Jericho might have a little bit more influence, but I think Kenny Omega does a lot more behind the scenes than anybody realizes. I would have MJF hold the title still. Yeah, I would. Have I ever had a macchiato? Yes, I have. I've had caramel macchiatos. I'm not really big on sweet drinks, especially with coffee. I mean, I've been a coffee connoisseur the last 6 months. I am now into AeroPress pour overs, V60s, fucking clever drippers, you know, everything. K-Cup, I have like once a month when I'm too lazy to fucking brew anything. But macchiatos, I will have once in a while. But the problem is, if I have something really sweet, I'm still thirsty after. In fact, tonight, I actually, just for the fuck of it, I made a coffee and I put a shot of Bailey's in it. And I'm not kidding. I literally have a liter of water in front of me. Not Lita, L-I-T-A, but a liter of water. And I've drank about 90% of it. And I know I got thirsty because of the macchiatos. For some reason, I get thirstier when I have sweet drinks. So thank you, Rams fan. Kevin Croft, an idea for a future Forbidden Door episode. I go live for an hour or two, and I call people up randomly. People leave their phone numbers. I randomly call them live on the show. Kind of like the reverse of taking calls from a couple of years ago. I like it. The only problem I have with it, and I immediately thought about this when I read your question or comment, feedback, idea, I think of Vince McMahon's $1 million giveaway. I think when Vince McMahon wanted to give away a house and In Your House, and Vince calling the number and nobody answers the phone, like, I don't know, man. You know, that you're asking for trouble. I think if people left phone numbers and wanted me to just call people random to talk about wrestling, you run the risk of getting no answers, wrong numbers. Somebody, plus, that's another thing. You know, I've been around since 1997, guys, and I've seen shows get trolled. The Minority Report troll job that happened, that I still have on audio, is one of the funniest things that I will ever, ever hear. And I just think of Devil's Advocate. And if I know that a show is going to say, oh, leave your phone number and we'll call you up live on the show to talk wrestling, I would find every person that I hate in this world and leave their phone numbers. I'd be, hey, how you doing? This is Joey. Yeah, a big fan of your show. Been following you since day one. Give me a call. And the phone number I leave is somebody that I hate. Or I leave the phone number for like some elderly person's house. Or I leave the phone number for like a police station. Or maybe leave a phone number for some scammer. Like, there's so much risk for trolls. That's the only reason why I wouldn't do it. The wrong numbers and the no answers would kind of suck, but too many risks for trolls, and it would be really too much work to like verify numbers. And I mean, I know I could figure out very easily to do that. you know, only registered people on the shows could leave a phone number and this and that, and you've got their DMs. Yeah, there's ways of doing it. But still, you know, the problem with doing calls back in the day, and it sucked that it fell into the same routine, but I got too many complaints about it. And, you know, I try to please everybody. And I understand there's nothing I could do that's going to please 100% of the people 100% of the time. And the problem that I started getting over and over again was people complaining like, oh, the same people calling in every show, same people calling in. And back when we used to do the Minority Report and take calls, some people would call in just to call in. And you'd be like, hey, who's this? Hey, this is Joey. Hey, how you doing? I'm all right. Oh, cool, cool. You know, what do you want to talk about? You guys see Raw tonight? Yeah, we just did a whole recap about it. Oh, yeah, I thought it was a good show. And you, next thing you know, you got a tenth of your audience like, oh, this is awful. And they disconnect. I'm not saying that anybody individually was awful, but that's the problem you fall into. There's a lot. That's why the watch parties were forced to stop for a while. I had hundreds of people sign up for the watch parties. And then when they finally started happening, you know, there was a very, very loyal 10, 15 people that would show up. And they were awesome. Every single one of them were great. But the problem is, in the big scope of things, you can't do something like that and eat up two nights of your week for you to have 15 people show up. You do it for the love of wrestling, but when every day during a week has something wrestling related with it, you got to kind of like, you know, figure out like, okay, what is, you know, what can you do, what you can't do. And unfortunately, that had to stop as well. I would love to bring it back, but so many people say they want to do it. And then when it comes down to it, a lot of people don't show up. So, all right, last person for tonight, Aaron, with a couple of questions, and I'll run through these very quickly. Someone who had a short title reign, who has a short title reign, who could still be a good short-lived champion, even though Undertaker's first reign in 91 was only 6 days, but he defended it 3 times against the British Bulldog in those 6 days. I did not know that. That's actually pretty good. Listen, as I've said before, I don't have any problem with someone having a short reign. 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. But it's what you do with the reign. I mean, you know, you look back in the annals of history and you go down the list of champions and you look at how many days. You know, it's not technically how many title defenses. It's, you know, who are you facing? What kind of matches? You know, I've run down some champions of recent memory for some people. I don't want to name anybody specifically. But you look at their title defenses and you realize, like, you know, 10 of the defenses were against Dana Brooke and 8 of the defenses were against, and then you say to yourself, you know, when you actually examine a little bit more, there's like no matches that are memorable, no matches that really like sold a pay-per-view or really contributed to something. You know, to me, it's more about what those matches meant. So a number of matches and length of reigns is not the be-all, end-all. In some ways, look at Shinsuke Nakamura. By the way, where is he? Look at Shinsuke. Think about his Intercontinental title run. It's not his fault, but it's one of the worst runs in recent memory. And look how long he had that belt. Go look at his recent run as that champion, and you'll see how awful it is. It's awful. It's not his fault, but you can't just simply base things on number of days, number of defenses. But he does make an argument about Bianca Belair. She's got a reign right now, 374 days. He took the time to make this list, and it really puts in perspective how strong Bianca has been as champion. I know a lot of people are now using the term Joan Cena when it comes to Bianca Belair. But you know what? You look at this resume with her reign. Check this out. She has won these matches. Might not have all been title defenses, but this is since she's been champion. She's beaten Becky and Rhea 2 times in 3-way matches. Sonya Deville 3 times. Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan 2 times in 3-way matches. Becky, Liv Morgan, and Rhea Ripley twice in four-way matches. Becky Lynch twice. One of them was SummerSlam of last year. She's beaten Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley. She's beaten Rhea Ripley one-on-one. She's beaten Asuka and Becky Lynch seven times in three-way dances. One was at Hell in a Cell from last year. She's beaten Alexa Bliss and Asuka and Becky Lynch twice in Fatal Four Ways. She's beaten Carmella four times. One of them was at Money in the Bank from last year. Now, when you hear last year, obviously, 374-day run within the last year. So that's why when you hear last year, obviously. She's beaten Asuka, Becky, and Carmella three times in Fatal Four Ways. Asuka and Carmella in a three-way. She's beaten Asuka four times, most recently WrestleMania 39. She's beaten Bayley and Tamina in a three-way match. Bayley, she's beaten eight times. Extreme Rules 2022 and Crown Jewel at 2022 and the Last Woman Standing match. She's beaten Alexa Bliss from the Royal Rumble this year. She's beaten Bayley, Becky, and Chelsea Green twice in Fatal Four Ways. Beaten Becky and Chelsea Green in a three-way. And she's beaten Chelsea Green one-on-one. 49 title defenses. That's about one a week. A lot of the Bayley wins, I think, well, I shouldn't say a lot. I would say half of them are probably house shows. That is a strong run. Whether you call it John Cena or not, that is a strong run. There is no question about it. He also wants to tell us what a bad reign is, a long reign. He brings up, get this, El Hijo del Vikingo, the recent opponent of Kenny Omega. He is at 493 days in his current reign. How many times do you think he has defended his title in 493 days, everyone? We just discussed Bianca and how many title defenses? 49? Bianca's had 374-day reign. El Hijo del Vikingo is 120 days longer than Bianca. Bianca had 49. He has had a total of nine. Nine title defenses in 493 days. And he also points out the WWE Championship lineage, Daniel Bryan's reign, 145 days, 27 defenses. So Daniel Bryan at that time did three times the total defenses in just 145 days. So, you know, that's a pretty big deal. Hey, Ben, you have to count house shows when it comes to Bianca, because if you think that 49 times out of 53 weeks she's won on TV, we'd be pretty pissed the fuck off. Like, she's on fucking TV every week. Every week she's having a title. We would get so burned out and tired of it. You have to include the house shows. You put it this way, if you're not going to include the house shows, then why are you including those days of the week as well? If you say she's had a one-month reign, if she's fought in a house show four or six times, why wouldn't you count those six titles? You're counting the days of those of the week. Why wouldn't you count what she does on those days? I always consider house shows because that shows that somebody's trying to get better. It also shows that, you know, that they're working. And they're not just, you know, sitting on their ass. And yes, a lot of that is WWE's fault, not the wrestler. All right, last question for tonight. In the very prestigious NXT Women's title lineage, the shortest reign of all time is Kairi Sane at 71 days. Indi Hartwell, obviously less right now, but she just won the championship. He thinks that Indi Hartwell, if she ends up with four or five total title defenses, and losing it in about 60 days, maybe in NXT Battleground, which, by the way, we found out tonight, NXT Battleground is going head-to-head with AEW Double or Nothing. Yes, it's end. NXT is not happening at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So you're going to have to make a decision, guys. I think it was May 23rd. I don't have the exact date in front of me. But NXT Battleground will be going up against AEW Double or Nothing, head-to-head, 8 o'clock p.m. I'll talk about it on Wednesday's show. But if Indi Hartwell ends up with four or five title defenses and keeps the belt for about 60 days, ultimately losing it to Tiffany Stratton, and if Tiffany wins it, she should hold it for about a year. What do I think of that? Well, Indi Hartwell, listen, I've brought this up before. The problem with Indi Hartwell leading up to her winning at Stand and Deliver is how WWE used her for the whole year. WWE has given her probably 80% of her record as losses. She lost so many matches. None of us ever thought she would win that title, and I'm happy for her. She's definitely better than what her record shows. But the problem is WWE has given us this suspension of disbelief that Indy Hartwell, you know, cannot win a match most of the times if her life depended on it. Now suddenly she's the champion and she could beat everybody? Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe. You know what I mean? Like suddenly, that I'm not comparing her to Spike Dudley, but that was one of my biggest complaints about Spike Dudley back in the day holding the title. I don't know if it was the Cruiserweight title, but he suddenly became a champion in WWE and suddenly he became undefeated over and over and over and over. And it was so not believable. Maurice says it was Cruiserweight title. Yeah, I think it was. When he won that championship and he went on an undefeated streak, I'm like, no, no. It gets to a point where when someone loses so much, it's not that they become damaged goods, but you kind of have to have them build their way back, start to slowly get some wins, get a surprise win. Not the surprise title win, but you get a surprise win. And then you realize it's not a fluke and the person wins again. And the person maybe loses a match, but comes really close to winning. Next thing you know, a couple of months go by, and that person is winning more matches than they're losing. Then they win a title, then you could accept it. The problem is with Spike Dudley back in the day, they didn't want to spend that amount of time to build him back up as champion. And it didn't. Nobody believed it. Nobody bought it. That's why Spike Dudley's title reigns are not memorable, even when you rehash Spike Dudley's WWE career. Indy Hartwell, I get the same vibe. And it's not her fault, but Indy Hartwell lost so many matches. Now all of a sudden, I'm supposed to believe that she could beat everybody. She could be Cora Jade. She could be Zoe Stark. She could be Tiffany Stratton. She could be this. Suspension of disbelief. I can't buy into it. It would not be believable. And that's, again, that's not her fault, but that's just the perception. That's what happens when you have someone losing over and over and over and over and over again. And then there's this big petition to bring it to the main roster, and you can't bring it to the main roster. You don't want to bring it to the main roster because she can't, you know, leapfrog that many women. So you decide last minute, oh, let's put the NXT Women's Championship on her. You know, this way she's got some, you know, history, you know, in the books for her, and she could have a reign, and everybody's happy with it. The problem is it came out of nowhere, and suddenly she's invincible. You know, it's NXT, so you kind of let it go to a certain extent, but no, it's just, it's a hard sell for me right now. All right, everybody, we've gone 2 hours. So this was technically a triple show tonight. We had your Don Tony and Kevin Castle show, which went, I think about, 50 minutes? I think it went close to an hour. And that's a little bit longer than what Kevin and I had originally planned. But I want to thank him for joining me again. You know, I know a lot of you want this to be a weekly thing, and I don't want to put that on Kev. That is not fair to Kev. But we wanted to mix it up a little bit tonight. Since I was gone for 6 days, we wanted to have a little bit of Don Tony and Kevin Castle show, a little bit of the Don Tony show, a little bit of DTVI Patreon, and everybody got a little taste of the three. So I hope you enjoyed it. Definitely leave your feedback. It is always appreciated. I want to give a shout-out to our great Patreon family. Shout-out to my YouTubers out there. Shout-out to everybody who's on audio only. I know people have noticed that there's been more of an audio-only footprint lately than you know, we've had in recent memory, and I think that is going to stay that way. There's no denying it. You've all seen it. We've talked about it. That we schedule shows at strange times with video, and even when we plan things on audio, some miraculously people come out of nowhere and like, oh, I'm going to stream at this time. So believe me when I tell you, if Kevin and I do this again in the near future, we're going to do it at a time that's going to be different than when we normally do, and we're going to intentionally choose a time that we know a majority of the bigger shows out there do not do theirs. And we're going to sit back and we're going to watch who suddenly does a stream at the same time we do, because it's pretty interesting to see. But that's why we do downloads, too. By putting this on DonTony.com to download, it's not live. They can't stop the downloads. So people will try to take whatever live viewers or listeners that we have, and that happens on Mondays, it happens on Wednesdays, it now happens on Sundays. I'm waiting for people to start doing it at 11 a.m. on Saturdays. But when we do downloads, pre-recorded, they can't do anything about that because it's not live. I mean, it's live for our Patreon family right now. But and look, I don't mind. I mean, I'm not going to force anybody to tune into, you know, you have a right to tune into whoever you want. But when I get a lot of people like, oh, DT, how come you're not doing a video show? And I'm like, well, you know, no offense, but you tune into somebody else's show live on video and you watch mine during the week. Why should I go to sleep at 4 o'clock in the morning and do all this extra work and editing and everything where, you know, 75% of you decide you're going to tune into someone else's video show? So, I mean, in common sense, you know, so we're reorganizing things a little bit. But one thing is for certain. Like we said at the beginning of the show, we're going to make sure that everything that is put out there, whether it's just me or Kev comes on again or we do a combination thereof, it's going to be really solid discussion that everybody will enjoy. No animosity, no hate, no competition, just doing what we do best. And so far, everybody seems to be enjoying it. So as always, for my Patreon family who is live right now, I'm typing thank you, everyone, for joining me, and I thank you all for joining us, whether it's live or on a replay. And I will be live Wednesday after Dynamite talking about a few topics. We'll definitely get into some NXT and AEW and MLW. Believe it or not, tonight was their last episode to go down on Reels. I will talk about it tomorrow if Reels is considering having another 10 weeks with them. If you pay attention to the people out there recording court, as I like to call it, they quietly seem to have not told anybody about that. So we'll talk about it tomorrow. But everyone, have a great night. Pleasure as always. And then we'll catch you all again soon. Be well.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah.